Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Talking about part six, chapter two. How do you make jam? Do you reckon they'll come back engaged? Those were the questions that I asked you guys. The Christmas, not a Christmas thing that I submitted a week or so ago. It is coming. I've just been flat out sorting cherries at the cherry farm and serving in the restaurant and everything. But it's more of a New Year's thing. I've just decided just now. It's more of a New Year's thing. That's why I said it's not a Christmas thing, because it really wasn't. It's a New Year's thing. I'm declaring, little hint, I am declaring 2020 the year, the international year of mischief. So get ready for some mischief. Get ready to do some mischief next year. How do you make jam? Do you reckon they'll come back engaged? I am Norwegian said, my grandfather loves picking berries. Strawberries, blueberries, blackcurrant, lingonberry, oh, and rhubarb, all get made into jam. I think he just boils them with sugar and adds a thickener. It's pretty easy. And yeah, I think Varvara and Arthur Levin are going to get married, if only because there's so much focus on the topic. I really... Afgavna? Who's Afgavna? As a character, you also missed out a word. I think you either like or hate Afgavia as a character. She's pretty much family, and it shows. That's all the conversation we had. I tell you what, this Christmas, New Year's point, part of the year, everyone just disappears, don't they? Everyone's on holidays, everyone's laying low. Wow. I will not tolerate it. Chapter 3 goes like this. Chapter 3, Kitty was particularly glad of the opportunity of being alone with her husband, for she had noticed the shadow of pain that flitted over his face, which so vividly reflected all his emotions when he came on the balcony, asked what they were talking about, and received no reply. When they started on their walk in advance of the others and had passed out of sight of the house onto the hard, dusty road, strewn with rye ears and grain, she leaned more heavily on his arm and pressed it. He had already forgotten that momentarily unpleasant impression, and being alone with her experienced now that the thought of her pregnancy never left him, a feeling still novel and joyful to him of pleasure, entirely free from sensuality at the nearness of a beloved woman. Jesus, Tolstoy, way to just tie a sentence into several knots. Let me read that again. He had already forgotten that momentarily unpleasant impression, and being alone with her experienced, now that the thought of her pregnancy never left him, a feeling still novel and joyful to him of pleasure, entirely free from sensuality at the nearness of a beloved woman. They had nothing to say to one another, but he wanted to hear the sound of her voice, which, like her look, had been changed by her pregnancy. In her voice, as in her look, there was now a certain softness and seriousness, as of a person continually intent on one beloved task. "You're sure you won't be tired? Lean more on me," he said. "No, I am so glad of a chance to be alone with you, and I own that, nice as it is to have them all. I regret our winter evenings alone together. They were pleasant, but this is still better. Both are better," he said, pressing her hand. "Do you know what we were talking about when you came in? About the jam?" "Yes, about the jam. And then about how people propose." "Ah," said Levin, listening more to the sound of her voice than to her words, thinking all the while about the road which now led through the wood, and avoiding places where she might take a false step. "And about Sergius and Varenka, did you notice? I want it so much, she went on. What do you think about it? And she looked into his face. I don't know what to think, Levin replied with a smile. Sergius seems very strange to me in that regard. I told you, yes, that he was in love with that girl who died. It happened when I was still a child. I only knew of it from what I was told. I remember him at that time. He was wonderfully charming, but since then I have observed him with women. He is amiable, and some of them please him. But I feel that for him they are simply human beings, not women. Yes, but now with Varenka, there seems to be something. Perhaps there is, but one must know him. He is a peculiar, a wonderful man. He lives only a spiritual life. He is a man of too pure and lofty a nature. What? Would that lower him? No, but he is so used to living a purely spiritual life that he cannot reconcile himself to realities, and after all, Varenka is a reality. Levin had by this time become accustomed to express his thoughts boldly without troubling to put them into precise phraseology. He knew that at such loving moments as the present, his wife would understand what he meant from a mere hint, and she did understand him. Yes, but in her there is not so much of that reality as there is in me. I know he would never have loved me. She is all spirit. Oh, no, he is very fond of you, and it is always such a pleasure to me when my people are fond of you. Yes, he is kind to me, but it's not like poor Nicholas. You would have loved one another, said Levin, finishing her sentence for her. Why not speak of him, she added. He added, sometimes I blame myself for not doing so. It will end by my forgetting him. Oh, what a dreadful, what a charming man he was. Yes, what were we talking about? He concluded after a pause. You think he can't fall in love, then? Said Kitty, putting his thoughts into her own words. Not exactly that he can't fall in love, Levin answered with a smile. But he has none of that weakness which is necessary. I always envied him. And even now, when I am so happy, I still envy him. You envy him because he can't fall in love? I envy him because he is better than I am, replied he, smiling. He does not live for himself. His whole life is subordinated to duty, and so he can be calm and contented. And you, said Kitty, with a mocking smile of loving amusement. She could not have expressed the sequence of thoughts that made her smile, but the last deduction was that her husband, in extolling his brother and depreciating himself, was not quite sincere. But she knew that this insincerity was the outcome of his affection for his brother, of a sense of shame at his own excessive happiness, and especially of that desire to improve which never left him. She loved this in him, and therefore smiled. And you, what are you dissatisfied with? She said with the same smile. Her disbelief in his dissatisfaction with himself was pleasant, and unconsciously he challenged her to give reasons for her disbelief. I am happy, but dissatisfied with myself, he answered. How can you be dissatisfied if you are happy? I mean, how shall I put it? In my heart I wish for nothing more except that you shouldn't stumble. Oh dear, how can you jump so? He said, interrupting the conversation to rebuke her for making too quick a movement while stepping over a branch that lay across the path. But when I examine myself and compare myself with others, especially with my brother, I feel how bad I am. In what way? Asked she, still smiling. Don't you do anything for others? What about your small holdings, your farming, and your book? No, I feel it now more than ever, and it is your fault, he answered, pressing her arm, that it's not the right thing. I do it, but it is superficial. If I could love all that work as I love you, but of late I have been doing it like a task set me. Well then, what do you say to Papa? Asked Kitty. Is he bad too, because he does nothing for the common good? He? Oh no. But one must have your father's simplicity, clearness and kindness. And have I got all that? I don't act, and I worry. It's you who have done it. Before you were there and that, he said, with a glance at her figure, which she understood, I put all my strength into my work, but now I can't, and I feel ashamed. I do it just like a task that has been set me. I pretend. Then would you now like to change places with Sergius Ivanich? Asked Kitty. Would you prefer to do that public work and love that given task as he does and nothing more? Of course not, replied Levin. However, I am so happy that I don't understand anything. So you think he will propose today? He added after a pause. I do and I don't, but I want him to, awfully. Wait, we'll see. She stooped and picked an ox-eye daisy by the roadside. There, begin. He will propose, and he won't. And she handed him the flower. He will, he won't, said Levin, pulling off the veined white petals. No, no, exclaimed she, watching his fingers excitedly as she seized his hand to stop him. You've pulled off two at once. Well, then we won't count this tiny one, said he, picking off a short, ill-formed petal. And here's the trap overtaking us. Aren't you tired, Kitty? The princess called out. Not at all. If so, you'd better get in, if the horses are quiet, and go at a walking pace. But it was not worth while to drive, as they had nearly reached the place. And so they all went on foot. Alrighty, there we go, another chapter chaptered. Have your say about that chapter over at the subreddit. Thank you very much for listening. See you tomorrow.